Once again, my name is Adner Abreu, and this class, I'll be covering growing greenhouse tomatoes. I'm the farm manager of Eden Valley Farm, and we have programs there that you can come and join us for 9 months in the farm and learn a lot about greenhouses and growing. And if you know anybody that will benefit from that as well, send us our way. But if you want to come for 1 week and see our farm, the first week of June, we have a one-week farm experience where people that have come have been blessed, and they have gone rejoicing. So we haven't lost a patient yet. So you guys are all welcome to come. So growing greenhouse tomatoes, and we'll be talking about greenhouse types. So we'll brief through the hoop house. I'm not going to spend much on that because we just spent a whole hour on that one. But seed selection. So just giving you some tips to select the right seeds, planting methods, some of the ways that you can plant in your greenhouses, and as well planting tomatoes, fertilization, what kind of fertilizer I use, and what kind of programs I use when it comes to fertilizing my tomatoes, and basically what I use as well throughout the farm as well. So disease control, pruning, trellising, and other factors to consider as well. So this one, we talked about the why, and basically just understanding why you're getting that greenhouse, very, very important as well. You don't wanna go off-roading in a sedan, because otherwise it will be a little hard. You'll get stuck, right? So there are three types, basically, of greenhouses or hoop houses. You have your cold frame, your high tunnel, which we just talked about, and then you have your greenhouse. And basically, my mind to understand, to differentiate the two, is that greenhouse is basically the one that has that you can control your environment, control that temperature really good. Then we have the cold frame. This is ideal for very cold environments. It is quite the most affordable out of the pack. I know there were some questions here when I was explaining about making your hoop houses. This is kind of what I meant. If you notice, there's some 2x6s right here. You put that down, and this will give you strength in your hoop house. Ideal use, greens, growing in the winter, having chickens in the winter, and all these things. One of the disadvantages is that it has no support system, and it gets quite hot in the summer. So if it does really well in the winter, it's not going to do really well in the summer. High tunnel. As you can see, we have a green tractor inside this tunnel. So it's quite high. And if you live in a warmer climate, this is what I would recommend. This one, later on, you can install a support system. It can extend your growing season longer as well, and is easier to cultivate due to its height. You can be there a little longer before you start to cook. You can drive your tractor in there. You can just, operate quite easily there. If you have any questions, write it down, and then at the end, we'll start talking about it once again. Greenhouse, you have a heating and cooling available, you have a support system, and you have a year-round production. This greenhouse in particular, the one in the picture, have a roll-up system, which is a great thing as well. It helps tremendously. Now, do not have a roll-up system and an exhaust system at the same time, like your exhaust and your swamp cooler, because it's just not going to work too well. Now, let's talk about seed selection, what I really want to spend a lot of time on as well. And that is that what are some things to consider when you're thinking about selecting the seed for your greenhouse, for your tomatoes, and as well, just in general, whether you're growing lettuce, whether you're growing pretty much everything that you're thinking about growing. And one of the first things that I like to ask is, what is the purpose of the crop? If you are a home gardener and you want to just grow for yourself, I would recommend for you to try a bunch of varieties and you just enjoy it. have beautiful colors, and just create a fun environment out of that greenhouse. Now, if you're thinking about then growing for profit and growing that greenhouse, tomatoes, there are actually tomatoes that will do better in greenhouses than outside. So you need to look for that variety that will do well in greenhouses, not outside. So just to have that in consideration there. Now, the location, this is important as well, because certain varieties are more resistant to cold, certain other varieties are more resistant to heat, and you want to find that one that works well for you. Now, one of the reasons why farmers and local growers in general keep that we use hybrids is because that's how we find a strong resistant to variety. That's how you find basically the that variety that works well for you, that is nice and red like you like it, that is very resistant to nematode or anything that you're facing around the area, and as well that's how you find that variety that just performs really well in your area. You can grow some heirlooms, and I've been having great success. I've been using a fertilization program that I'll give you more details later, that is from this company called Advancing Eco Agriculture. And with when it comes, I mean, it has helped our tomato growth tremendously. But when it comes to growing heirloom tomatoes, it has given me the production, the results that I never imagined, really. Because one of the things, if you've grown heirloom tomatoes, they kind of grow a lot, then they kind of stop, and they just or they don't produce as much. They grow high, and you don't have much tomatoes. But now I'm getting Brandywine, nice and big, a lot of them, just beautiful. I mean, the result, it's amazing. So if you're gonna grow heirloom, just make sure, one of the tips that I have is that make sure your soil has a lot of nutrients in there, because tomatoes are heavy feeders, but heirlooms are almost like, you know, they like to eat extra. They are that, you know, the type of vase that we go the third and the fourth time. And so that's what heirlooms are. Now, there are two types of variety when it comes to tomatoes. You have your determinate one and the indeterminate one. And if you're growing, if you're thinking about for canning, for example, if you're thinking about growing for just for the summer or for your family, then the one that I would recommend, it will be the determinate variety. The determinate variety will be the one that will give you a lot of tomatoes at once, and it will get you out of trouble, will give you a lot of tomatoes in your counter so you can preserve them. Now, if you're thinking about then the greenhouses, and for long-term production, then the indeterminate one will help you with that. And you can think it as determinate tomatoes will give you the tomatoes all at once, just like here it is. But the indeterminate variety will just keep producing nice and slowly and steady throughout the season. Now, even within the indeterminate varieties, there are some tomatoes that will produce faster, all of them, and some will take a little longer. So if you're thinking about long-term productivity and long-term production in your greenhouse, you want to consider choosing a variety that is not going to just give you all the tomatoes all at once, but it will just give it nice and slowly throughout the season. Now, let's talk about seedlings, starting trays. Starting trays is one of the things that I use. I use a 72 plug trays for all my seedlings. That's kind of like the standard that I use in all my seedlings. Now, when it comes to greenhouse tomatoes, I like to use a 32, which is a little bigger. So if you notice right here, these are my greenhouse tomatoes, And like right here, I'm germinating some basil. And I was mentioning early, one of the things that I like to see in my seedlings is that when you plant your tomatoes, you have to see that germination within the first 30 hours of your seedlings to start germinating. You want to see all that, meaning you want to see that germination. Because if your seedlings starting to, with stress, if your seedlings have a hard time germinating, they're already under stress, whether because of temperature, because of seed quality, and then basically you're setting up yourself for failure when you're having problems in the seedlings. So if your seedlings, if you're having problem with your seedlings that they're not germinating on time, that they're taking forever to grow, then just grab those seedlings and toss them away. You know, you don't want to start dealing with problems so early in life with those things. You know, it's going to come up. The fungus is going to come up. So don't start so early with it. And the other thing is that providing a good environment to a healthy plant will give you, will yield a really good result. But if you have a good environment, nice and warm, nicely treated, a lot of fertilizer, and then the seedlings are already struggling, you're like, I don't know what's, you know, the plants will be not doing as well, and you might be thinking, what am I doing wrong? And that's just simply you're starting with that seedling. So I think, like I mentioned earlier as well, I believe that a huge percentage of the success in your growth, whether you're growing tomatoes, whether you're growing peppers, whatever you're growing, the huge portion of your success in growing is actually mastering your seedlings. And it's actually one of the last things that a farmer will actually master, because it's so complex, so delicate. So there has so many variants. And my recommendation is that if you don't have your seedling skills down, to start working on it, because it will help you improve tremendously your success in the plant, in your crops. Soil medium, what I use is a soilless mixture. And basically the idea of germinating something is not about growth and giving them nutrients. It's basically providing this perfect, beautiful environment, comfortable environment for the seed to germinate. Because the whole purpose of this medium to germinate the seeds is not about that when they come out, you know, that when they germinate, they have good nutrition. No, it's basically providing that comfortable, that happy home, that when they germinate, they're like, we can start our life nice. You know, we have a happy place to stretch here. Now, of course, after a few days, then you need to start feeding your seedlings. But understanding that a good germination soil has aeration, has good water retention, but at the same time has good drainage. Don't just use peat moss, because peat moss, it will hold your seed in there forever, and it will rot your seeds. So you have to have those mixes of perlites and other things that soil medium, seed germination medium have. Temperature. One of the things that I like with temperature in my, when germinating, it's about 75 close to 80 degrees, and sometimes about 70 to 75. And one of the things that I can share here as well with you is that the best place to germinate your seedlings is to create a table. Ready for this? You create a table like this one, and then you put a 2x4 right here, and you fill it up with sand. You put your, you go off of Amazon and get 100-foot gutter tape, and then you basically coil that back and forth on top of that sand, and then you add a little more sand just to cover very lightly, and then you add a fine wire mesh over that just to send the heat away. And let me tell you, this will work better than any heating mat. I have a heating mat myself that I purchased, and I don't use it. Because what happens here is that this table right here just becomes, the sand heats up, and the whole place becomes beautifully warm, 75 degrees. So it becomes heated very evenly. Let me tell you, I know someone that in a non-heated hoop house is growing in the Carolinas, is growing tomatoes, seedlings in March. And so this stuff will help you because it has a lot of warmth right here. And even though the greenhouse is not heated, this area is. So if you have a hoop house and you want to start your seedlings, there is a good technique, huh?
What was the line you said?
Gutter heat tape. So in cold weathers, in the gutters, they put this heat tape that warms up. So what you do, all you have to do is buy a thermostat off of Amazon. When you buy that heat tape, that has a probe that you put here, and it basically controls the electricity that when it reaches a certain temperature, it turns off. So because if you leave it on all the time, it becomes too hot. So you need that thermostat to control the temperature. And the results I've had, and I mean, this is like, it works so well. I can't, it's just amazing. I germinate seeds when it's in February in Colorado, when it's minus 20 outside, that stuff germinates like if it's summer. It's just an amazing thing how it germinates. Just hold that question there just for a little longer. But basically, transplanting to bigger trays. And this is just another concept, and that is basically up-potting. You don't want to up-pot too much, but you want to, if you don't have a place or a table like this to germinate comfortable, germinate all your seeds in one area. There are some, there is this tray that has kind of like little trenches there. It's called row trays, I think. And then you buy this row trays and you put your seeds here. And that's how nurseries and things like that germinate their seeds. And then you can put thousands of seeds in there. And then you take that tray and you put it in a warm area in your house. And so that way you don't have to heat a whole greenhouse just for one tray of tomatoes. And the germination is really good. And then you grab, once that germinates and you see two true leaves, then you grab your tomato plants and then basically you transplant them into a 72 block tray or a 32. And I've done that and it works really, really good. Fertilization. I like to fertilize my seedlings. As soon as I see a true leaf or two, then I apply a very light fertilizer right over it. With the fertilization, you can use some organic fertilizer for your seedlings. But the thing is, since for a fertilizer that is organic to work, it has to be a little bit, it will be too concentrated for your seedlings. And you end up actually burning your seedlings many times. So I like to use for my seedlings, and this is the only time I basically use this, I use a synthetic fertilizer, like a 20-20-20, and I spread it right, you know, and that's what I use to fertilize my seedlings. And even for the first time that I fertilized, I even diluted even more than what the instructions say. So if generally, let's say it's one tablespoon per gallon, I will be adding half a tablespoon per gallon. Or what I do is that once I'm done fertilizing, I grab regular water and rinse off the leaves, because the leaves are so tender and they get burned really easy. But at the same time, you want those roots to find a lot of fertilizer, a lot of nutrients in there. All right. And then one of the questions that I get asked the most is like, when are your seedlings ready? In what time frame? And the time frame varies. But what I like to do is that the moment I can pull those tomatoes out of the tray without leaving any dirt behind, then that's when my seedlings are ready. And so there are two planting methods that I use, and I have used, and I still use it. And the spacing between plants, it will be 16 inches or 8 inches. If you use a 16 inches method approach, here on the picture on the right, you will see that I have just a regular bed with two rows of tomatoes. And you basically put 16 inches apart, two rows. Now, if you live in an area that the soil is really bad and you're making your own soil, or here, for example, the picture on the left, you can see that what I did here is that I dug a trench about 1.5 feet deep. I filled it up with organic matter. I put a little bit of topsoil on top, and then I planted one line, one row, 8 inches apart. And then that way I only use one drip tape. And since I need to build my own soil and bring all that organic matter, I only use about 1 foot apart, wide to prepare my beds. So basically that's that. That was actually the picture on the left here is in Dominican, and that's about 10 plus years ago. Fertilization and watering. The company I use is called Advancing Eco Agriculture, and basically their approach to fertilization is adding a lot of microorganisms and food to feed the microorganisms and as well supply the plants with the fertilizer they need according to their stage of growth. So plants aren't absorbing or trying to look for nitrogen all the time. They are according to their stages, they're trying to look for that nutrient. So if it's blooming stage, then you want to increase a little bit your phosphorus. If you're in your growth stage, you want to increase your nitrogen. If you're growing a lot of greens, you know, you want a fertilizer that has a little higher amount of nitrogen than other things, and your greens will start doing really well. Welcome. And so fertilization methods, again, helps to improve the microorganism in the soil, micronutrients, follow the stages of the crop with the proper nutrient required at each stage. And the way I use this is that I use my drip tape and I fertilize through the drip tape every other week in foliar. Through foliar application, I fertilize weekly. Again, tomatoes are heavy feeders. They're looking for food. And one of the things as well is that when you have a garden bed, and you have, for example, you have lettuce, beets, carrots, one cucumber plant here, one tomato plant in this corner, and this is all in one bed, you have an ecosystem there. You have plants absorbing nutrients at each level of at a different depth of the soil, and therefore like the carrots are way down there and the lettuce are up here, so they're not really competing for nutrients, and as well they're absorbing different nutrients at the same time. But when you have, for example, you're in the greenhouse and you have 800 plants absorbing the same stuff at the same level of your soil, then it's like you run out of food really fast. So the plants are growing, everybody's competing for nutrients, so you have to supply a higher amount of nutrients in your soil. And that's how you can get really good production of tomatoes, cucumbers, whatever monocrop you are doing in your garden. Or in your greenhouses. This computer, it's falling on me. Falling. All right. Now, ways to control your disease. Maintain healthy plants. This is one key aspect here. Control humidity on the drier side rather than moist. Tomatoes, they don't like their roots to be wet all the time. So you can use this two approach to watering. You can either, if you live in an area that has a heavy soil, very clay, a lot of clay, I like to soak that soil really good. I mean, sometimes, like, I water my greenhouses for 6 hours. and just soak that greenhouse. By then, I don't water it for another 3-4 days. I don't have to water that greenhouse. And sometimes in the spring, I will only do that like once a week. Now, if you live in an area that you have more of a sandy, a lot of silt, a lot of loamy soil, you have to water a little different. And that is more of a 20 to 30 minutes at a time, but more often. Because what happens is that if you soak your sandy soil, the water will drain faster, or as well, you will change the structure of the soil, kind of sinking that soil, that soil. So you want to avoid these kind of things. But when it comes to, for example, a soil that is heavy, when you water really good, in the process of that soil drying, then what happens is that soil actually kind of aerates and it just becomes fluffy and nice. But it doesn't happen. That doesn't happen to a sandy soil. So just slow amounts of water. Don't overwater your sandy soil. Beneficial insects that I use is Aphidius colemani for aphids and ladybugs. Ladybugs attach the mature aphids, and Aphidius colemani attach the young ones. Some of the things that I apply for sprays to prevent some of these things is neem oil, and this is stylet oil. Now, neem oil is one of those things that you can use as an insecticide and as a fungicide. It has those two elements in there that you can kill both. Now, the thing is about neem oil that I actually stopped using it is because it stains your product. So especially me that I'm trying to sell tomatoes at the market, then I don't want this little black spot that you can wash off, but I'm not going to be washing every tomato that I sell. And so that's why I don't use it. And sometimes it's a little sticky. And so what I actually use in the farm there is a fungicide that is called Sonata. Just like the car, but just put Sonata fungicide. That way, you know, a car doesn't pop up. just your fungicide. And that's what I use to control any fungus. Now, Pyganic will be another one that I use to control anything that flies. And so, and that is spelled Pagnic. All right. So now, in order to fight disease, we're going back to the variety. If you're having problem with your nematodes, if you're having problem with fusarium, if you're having problem with wilt, if you're having problem with things that really attack your areas, then you want to be looking for those varieties that will help you with that. One of the things that I like to do as well in my greenhouses or basically in anything, I don't like to have anything that has disease. So if a plant is already getting sick, I'm pulling them right out. And so this is a healthy environment. I want to keep it as a healthy environment. So anything that is sick, I pull it out. Anything that is getting decomposed, I move it out of there. So just keep that environment nice and sterile and clean as well. It will help you with the disease control. All right. In the pruning area here, we have, if you notice right here, we have cherry tomatoes and slicing tomatoes. And the first pruning that I do, now you prune two different things. You prune leaves and you prune suckers. Suckers, you prune throughout the stages of the plant. So as long as they're manageable for you to grab, don't go too early in there. Just as long as that you can prune them off, just go ahead and prune them off. But leaves are a little bit different. So The first pruning that I do is basically up to the last leaf before the first flower. So tomatoes grows a little bit, put few leaves, and then sets the first flower. And then basically you prune everything underneath that, all the leaves off. And the reason we do that is because to create some airflow down there in the greenhouse. You want that oxygen to flow. The second one, so after, if you notice right here, you can see all those ripe tomatoes. So when you start seeing those ripe tomatoes on your vine, that's when you're going to prune After the first ripe tomatoes appear, prune up to the last set of tomatoes with mature tomatoes. So you want to expose those tomatoes actually to the sun, not so early, that way you don't get those hard tomatoes, but just the mature tomatoes, and as well, that way you can see your tomatoes and your plants realize that they need to keep growing. One aspect is that we don't really let these tomatoes, that greenhouse there was past the time of us harvesting the tomatoes, but we don't actually let the tomatoes go ripe on the vine. You want to, the moment you see your those tomatoes turn yellow a little bit, you gotta take them off the vine and finish them off on your ripening rack or just in your cool room. And the reason why is because the purpose of a plant by nature given by God was to reproduce, to give seeds. And once the plant gives that seed, it kind of becomes lazy. So if you let all your tomatoes ripen really good on the vine, then what happens is that they're like, I'm kind of done here. And then they become lazy. But if you keep cutting and if you harvest, they don't let to get that stage that they're like, I'm good, I produce enough seed. So basically, I keep harvesting my tomatoes. As soon as they're a little yellow, then I harvest them off, and I harvest about two, sometimes three times a week. Of course, there will be some tomatoes that are redder than other, but just that's one of the tricks to keep your tomatoes growing. Another reason that we prune the leaves is because we want all the energy, all the nutrients that are going to those precious leaves to go to actually tomatoes and for the plants to keep growing. And so, you know, it's like the eagle and, you know, it pushes the eaglets. At some point, it's like, you need to move on in yourself. You know, you got to go. So because I got to keep going with my life, right? And so basically, we're doing the same thing here with the tomatoes. We want all that nutrient to really focus on top, because your goal as a farmer, your priority, it's up here. You know, you want to keep nurturing that plant. The ripe tomatoes, you kind of, you're done. I mean, they're already ripe. They're already big. Your job is done. Now the only thing you have to do is sell it or eat it or give it away. Now, make sure you have 1 to 2 feet of foliage at all times, and sometimes even more. I like to prune no more than half of my plants unless I am dealing with some infestation of fungus, that in that case, then I prune quite heavily. It's sprayed twice a week until the fungus problem disappears. So if you have some kind of infestation there, then you can deal with it that way. So here on the left, you see the cherry tomatoes. Cherry tomatoes produce a lot of foliar, and yeah, it's they. If you want to start with tomatoes, don't start with cherry tomatoes, because they are fast moving. They move really fast. All right, trellising. Start trellising your plants before they start to fall over. One of the mistakes I see is that people wait until the tomatoes are too big for them to just start putting those twines and things like that. Just start, as soon as you plant those things, just start putting those clips there. Just start trellising your tomatoes. That way they don't get damaged. And the way I like to do it, start basically with one clip right below the strong leaves. Now, the lowering part of the tomatoes. And this is when the tomatoes will reach the top. The tomatoes will reach the top where you have this your support system. And sometimes you either get up there with a ladder, or sometimes, you know, your greenhouse is not high, it's not as high that you actually, you know, you can reach it by hand. I mean, standing on the ground. But basically what it is that once the plant reaches there, what I do is that I grab that plant, take all the clips off, and then just lay it on the ground and move it to about where the plant is about belly button high. Of course, you know, that's about 3-4 feet. Some people are a little taller than others. But basically, keep it. Don't leave it so high because they're gonna grow so fast. But at the same time, don't put it so low because then you will have too many tomatoes, too many green tomatoes on the floor, and you want to avoid that. It's not a bad thing for tomatoes to lay on the ground, but at the same time, you don't want more than what you really need. And here, basically, I move three plants out of the way, and that creates space for me to bring the fourth plant down and lay it down. So unless you're growing greenhouse tomatoes and indeterminate, you're not going to deal with this. If you're growing determinate tomatoes, this is definitely won't be your problem. It's a little honestly hard to explain just, you know, here, but of course, once you come to Eden Valley, I'll explain to you there. All right, factors to consider, and time of the year, huge, temperature, soil humidity, variety, and on-time fertilization. Don't wait until your plants are starving to feed them. Just start the fertilization system, I mean that start fertilization program right away. And even if your plant looks healthy, just keep fertilizing, because if they're healthy, keep them healthy, right? We don't wait until we're very skinny to start eating again. You know, like we eat every day, three times a day. And so it's kind of like the plant, just keep feeding them. And as well, the variety is a huge factor. On-time fertilization and stress before and after transplanting. So the way you avoid stress is that you have to harden your seedlings. One of the things I do is that when they come out of the seed starting greenhouse, I put them in the greenhouse that they're going to be at, and I leave them there for about 2 days. So if I'm going to plant, let's say, tomorrow evening, I will put them there either the day before or 2 days prior. And I'll go there and water it while they're on the floor. And that's just simple. I just want them to get adapted to the area. And the same thing goes if you live in a cold environment for anything that you plant outside. So these are, you know, growing tomatoes, growing greenhouse tomatoes has a lot of factors, has a lot of components and a lot of details. But once you have those in motion, once you put that in place, then you will start seeing results like you never seen before. Because, you know, you may have the right soil, you may have the right greenhouse, but then you're dealing with the wrong variety. And then that's not going to help you at all. And so with the best of your ability, just try to do your best and keep improving and keep it real simple. And you'll be growing from day one. So we're open now for questions and answering any of your questions. Yes, sir. Yes. All right. That probably went too fast, huh? I'm sorry about that. Basically, you want to create a table. You know, it's not a table just like this. You want to create your own table out of 2x4s and things like that. And then you want to put at least 3 inches of sand, 3 to 4 inches of fine sand. And once you create that, then you gonna get a gutter heat tape. And basically, you're going to bring that down, move 4 inches down a little bit, and basically just coil it up and down that table with about 3 to 4 inches of distance between those heat tapes. And then after that, you're going to grab a fine wire mesh and put it on top. So we're talking about kind of like a window screens. It has to be metal though. Some window screens aren't. And you will put that on top, and then your trays, when you germinate your seeds, that's what you're going to place on top of that wire mesh. And this will help you big time when it comes to germinating your seeds, because the sand warms up. I mean, it's so nice and warm that you put your hand right under the germination tray and you feel the warmth. It's interesting that when you use like heat mats and other things, you put your hand there and it's like you really have to keep your hand there for a little bit to feel it. But this, you feel that warmth. And since you're watering your seedlings, that creates just nice, that water helps to even out the heat even more, because the sand will be a little moist, a little wet there. And of course, as the heat tape moves and the heat, there's the evaporation, there's that moisture that even helps even more to germinate your seed a lot better. Yeah, so the meadow screen, I use it to transfer, basically to make the heat even, to spread it evenly throughout the tray. Yeah, so just as a diffuser of the heat. Chicken wire won't work. It has to be a little smaller. Yes. Yeah. So the heat tape, it's hot, but it's not, I mean, you can hold it and it won't burn you. But it's warm enough to melt the ice and the snow that collects in the gutter. And so, but it warms it up really good, usually, and that's how I obtain a 75 degrees temperature in the soil to germinate those trays really, really good. And so, I mean, the heat that generates, you can actually feel your trays that are warm. And so yeah, it's very good. So sometimes they're a little, you can cover them a little bit with the sand so they're not so exposed. That way they're not going all over the place, your heat tape. So you can sink them a little bit, put about an inch of sand on top, and then you still have, you'll be doing really, really good. Yes, sir. Unfortunately, I don't. I just remember that top of my head, and I want to share it with you. So, yes. yeah, definitely. So basically, what I recommend for everyone here is to go and get a moisture meter. So get that moisture meter, and then in your case, you will be watering really heavy for about 2-3 hours. Soak that ground with the fertilizer or without fertilizer, just soak it really good, and then let it dry. And then when it's dry, which that will vary, in the summer it can be every 2 days or 3 days, or in the winter it could be every once a week. Now I use a kind of like semi-automatic method of watering, and that is I have I just go to Lowe's or Home Depot and get the automatic water controls timer. Yeah, the timers. Thank you. And basically, I program that. Let's say that in March I'm watering once a week, so I program it for once a week. Let's say I water every Tuesday, and I go there on Monday night and still moist, all right, then I delay my watering. But if I'm very busy, which happens a lot, and it's dry and I don't go by there and I forget, it still gets watered, because it's better to overwater once and then say let me delay and dry it out than for something not to get water. That's there's more damage in not, well, I'm not sure which is more damaged, overwatering than underwatering, but in the case of controlling and looking at it, it's, you have less damage for you to say, oh, this stuff is too wet, let me let it dry, than be like, yep, that's toasty. I do that a lot with greens and some greenhouses that, you know, I have beets and some things that are not top of my list, of my priority list. So I just put that automatic there. And sometimes I walk there and it's like, wow, this is a little moist. And then, so the next watering cycle, I just skip it. And so, yeah, so that's, I use that and it has worked with me well. Heat tape, like duct tape. Oh, it's a gutter. It's, I'm sorry. It's all right. All right. Variety wise? Oh, there is a lot of varieties. I'm using right now, Big Beef is a good one. Geronimo is a good one. It's quite expensive. Plum Regal, it's one that is a determinant one. That's a really nice one. There is quite a bit of them. And depends where you are, I would recommend different things. Soil blocks, yeah, I don't have really anything against it. I just don't do them. You can as well, yes. Now, you see, in U.S., actually, and in some part, of course, more than others, but the amount of fertilizer, liquid fertilizer, things that you can buy, it's such an affordable thing that, you know, it's worth just buying a 55-gallon drum of fish emulsion, for example, or amending things. But like compost tea, for example, you can get a gallon of fish emulsion, get some molasses, for example, put it in a 35-gallon drum and mix that for a few days and then use that as your fertilizer, and that's great too.
Fish emulsion,
yeah. We have one first and then back there. Somebody had a question here on my left? Okay, okay.
And I'm
gonna
guess you're zone 5 or 6.
Yeah, 5B is it, I think. So I grow my tomatoes. I start my seed 4 weeks prior of my last frost. Mm-hmm. And that's a general, I mean, it doesn't matter where you are in the United States, that's it. 4 weeks prior to the last historical frost, not the last frost of last year, no, like historical frost, like your neighbor has never seen a frost after this date. And then after that, after the 4th week, of course, this is given the fact that I'm germinating my seeds indoors or in a warm greenhouse or my window, whatever. And then after the 4th week, I'll put it outside for 1 week just to harden my tomatoes. So I'm not planting them. I'm just putting them outside. And then on the 5th week of that, of the life of that plant, then I put it outside. And then in about 2 months, you'll be harvesting tomatoes. When it comes to fertilizer and adding things to, like amending and things like that to the greenhouse, once a year, I buy alfalfa pellets, bone meal, a little bit of gypsum in Colorado because there's a lot of clay there and you want to loosen it up a little. Truckload of sheet manure that we have a lot in the area. So then I grab all that, spread it in my greenhouses or in the field, and that's what I use once a year. Now, I use a lot of ground cover. All my greenhouses have ground cover. I pull maybe 2 weeds out of my greenhouses in the whole year. And in the fields, we use plastic mulch. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, right there. And so this one isn't. The biodegradable doesn't make it through a season in Colorado. And so it's one is made out of soybean, the other one is made out of petrol, so one is Monsanto and the other one is petrol, so whatever you want to buy. Yeah, so if you see in this picture, I'm sorry? Yeah, so the question, yeah, this is what, you know, in terms of the picture on the screen, I have a 2-inch line, yes, as a header, and then that 2-inch line feeds my drip tapes, and that's what I use in greenhouses, outside, throughout. You know, you can get away with 1.5 inches, for example, in a greenhouse, but it works really well everywhere. You want that volume of water, because the last thing you want is more pressure in one end than the other. You want that water to be even, and that's why, for example, when you're building your greenhouses, you want to make sure it's on level ground. Yeah. Yes, sir.
How can you tell if you're over-fertilizing?
Yeah, if you're over-fertilizing, that's... So, the one way that you can tell, for example, it's hard to tell in the sense of, you know, when you see your plants beautiful, just slow down the dose that you're applying. But for example, like nitrogen is one of those things that will kind of expand more. Like you can tell because your tomato plants are big and not much tomatoes. Then you're like, I need to slow down my fertilization program and try to eliminate as much of that nitrogen that I'm adding to into your tomatoes. But when it comes to organic, sustainable fertilization, it's a little hard to over-fertilize. Yeah, you had a question here.
What do you use for ground cover inside your
greenhouse? Ground cover, weed mat. Yes, yeah, it's a woven weed mat, and and it's, you know, it's strong.
The width.
15. And rainflow irrigation has the cheapest one I've found. I mean, it's, yeah. So I bought, that's like, for example, I'm planting 12,000 plants of strawberry this year, and I'm blanketing out a whole half an acre of it and planting my strawberries. And so, because I want the guest of the Lifestyle Center there at Eden Valley to, you know, to enjoy a walk on the garden and not stepping on weeds and things like that. So just, you know, and some guests actually like will help us in the farm sometimes. And so, yeah. And then this year, since I rotate, they're going to be very close to the Lifestyle Center. And so, yeah, but ground cover is something that, you know, I've been using more and more. And of course, now all the greenhouses, when it comes to tomatoes, they have ground cover, because it has huge benefits. You know, keeps the ground warm, but at the same time keeps it cool because the sun is not baking on it. The microactivity in the soil, the biology of the soil is really good. And there's water retention, doesn't evaporate so fast. And of course, if there is no weed, there is no competition of nutrients, because that's one of the things. It's like weeds aren't bad because they're weeds. It's just because they're sucking the nutrients that should be going to the tomato, to the lettuce, to the plant, and yet they're just, you know. So yes, the openings, there's no openings. You make your opening. Usually there is a tool that you will burn. You can buy it. It's called I forgot the name, but it's pretty much a whole burner. You can put on a ground cover. It will come up, and it's basically, huh? I think Red Dragon. It can be a brand, but yeah, it's, you know, you connect a bottle of acetylene in there, and it will make a fire, and it will heat up, and it will actually have two sides. And you have, you just have, the first one is a little smaller, and then if you keep going down a little, it's a little bigger. Now, you can make it just with a torch, and you can just make it right away. Some people use different method, but the point is that don't make it too big. So you might have a lack of potassium. Like the plants aren't absorbing the potassium, and so that's what helps ripen those tomatoes. And you may not have a lot of sun, so you need a little pruning. And so yes, right under it. I have put it on top too, and that's fine. It works both ways. Yeah, but because sometimes under, the mice will go and chew on it. And it's very hard to fix it down there. But usually on top we'll do it as well. So, and the thing is that, like, since I water for a long time, like the strawberries, for example, like I water all night long. And so whether it's underneath or something, I mean, I just let that thing go for a while. And so, I mean, usually, like, there are certain things that I watered for, sometimes about close to 16 hours, like my fields. And so when I turned that water on, because like Colorado is really dry, and so I want to soak that thing through. Like my raspberries, I water them for 3 days. So, because they need a good inch of water. They need plenty of water. And so, and by the way, if some of you can come to Eden Valley around September, you know, you can help us with our raspberries because we have a lot of them. And so, yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's the kind that we have. Yeah, you cut and yeah, so. Helping the farm, we have this year, we're going to have the most, and it's going to be about eight. Eight on the farm and then two other farmers markets. Yeah, because our farmers market team, it's full time. They don't pull one weed. They just selling. Like in the month of July, it's about like $60,000, $70,000 in 1 month. So, yeah. Everything. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. In the hundreds. So we're in right now. So, yeah. Any final questions? Huh?
So you have a reputation for people look for Eden Valley produce?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
People look for Eden Valley.
Yes.
Produce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we go to a farmer's market. That's one thing that we have done, and you know, we go to a farmer's market. So when, yeah, correct. So when you have a lot of outlets, it just starts to, you know, everything sells because one area, one town may not like kale, but the other one just consumes a lot. Like we're going now to like Boulder Market, and that market, they love tomatoes and especially our tomatoes. And it just, you know, like, for example, like roasted pepper is a thing. I mean, in roasted pepper this year, we did $20,000. And that market, nobody roasts. And people there, you know, there is no competition. And we sell, I mean, like in one afternoon, we can sell $1,200 just out of roasted peppers. We roasted right there. So you can say, I want a bushel roasted. Okay, $80 in 10 minutes. Here's a bag. Take it home. So, yeah. And right now, for example, I'm planting. And that's what, like, I have 3,000. I have, like, about 5,000 plants of peppers that are just for roasting. And I have different heat tolerance. I have some that are no heat, other mild, or the medium. And that's how we, you know, and then so some of our sales strategies, that's some of the things that we've done. And I wish I could, you know, chat with more about the sales strategies, but this is not that class. So
how much do you charge for your roasted peppers?
Roasted peppers, 1 pound is $8.
How do you do it?
Huh?
How do you roast them?
How do you roast them? We have a roaster that is pretty big. And it's just with flame roasted. If you look up roasted hatch peppers and on internet, you will see some roaster there. And it is amazing. The moment that roaster goes on, the smell diffuses through the town and the people that are sleeping, they wake up and they want, I gotta go to market. So some people are driving and they're like, and then they're like, I gotta stop. And so. No, they're a whole thing. The everything. Yeah. So and huh?
What type of pepper?
Yeah, there are several peppers. Some peppers don't roast as good. But you see, and this is one of the things I'll share. One of the sales things that since we're in the pepper business. So peppers, you don't make a lot of money with peppers usually. Like if you ask any market gardener, it'll be like, peppers, not much. But if you roast them, that's an added value product. If you deal with other things, then suddenly your sales will go up, you know, just because you added something different. And we're only roasting out of the A markets, we only roast in in six of them. And so we're trying to get into one that if that happens, it's going to go up big time because there's some competition there. But if we get there, I know that because we have one advantage is that we grow our own peppers. And a lot of the roasting guys that roast, they don't grow their peppers. They buy them from Pueblo in Colorado or New Mexico. And what happens is that at the end of the season, that's something that we discovered this year. At the end of the season, there's no peppers to sell. And, you know, there's no peppers. And people are still looking for peppers because humans have one thing, is that they leave things for later. So we take advantage of that. People go in July, oh, I'll buy my peppers, peppers later. And they end up running out of the main season. And the only ones that have peppers in October is us. And so that's one thing. So this year, instead of about 3,000, 4,000 peppers, I'm doing a little more, about 6,000 of them, of the roasting ones, with a total of about 9,000 plants. But green. Some of them, there's one variety, it's called Lunchbox. And that one is a sweet pepper. It's sweet, like you think I've added sugar to the peppers when they're roasted. It's amazing. So anyways, guys, thank you very much. Time's up. I will be here. Thank you. Yes. What type of raspberries? Joe and Jay and Himble Top.
Thanks so much.
Yes.
If your peppers are flowery.
You got one on my cards, right?
I don't.
Okay. And that you can, you know, we'll be hosting the Q&A and all my courses are there. So
thanks so much.
Yes. If your peppers are flowering, heat. Is it too early in the season, too late in the season? I would try different varieties.
Okay.
And I would try like different types of peppers. Oh yeah, and that will help you. Okay. Like there are some peppers that produce without you even think about it. So yeah. So but very soon I'll start my live Q&A. So yes. it's about 12. Yeah. Raspberry is a permanent patch.
Oh,
so,
and the strawberries.
And the strawberries is I do it every year.
Every year.
Rotate. Yeah.
But the raspberry.
Yeah, so you plant raspberry for the next 12 years, you're harvesting raspberries. It's the easiest thing to grow. Yeah.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.